All right, we have a few new questions here. Okay. You mentioned that there's no such thing as a ghost. I didn't say that. You got to be careful quoting me here. I didn't say that. I said there's no biblical warrant for believing in them. Okay? Anyway, you mentioned that there's no such thing as a ghost, but why did the disciples call Jesus a ghost? Because they thought he was a ghost. Apparently they believed in ghosts. Remember we talked about there are things in the Bible that technically are not true because we're simply quoting somebody who was wrong. So that's why they thought he was a ghost, because apparently they believed in ghosts. Now, are they saying from authoritative statement as a authoritative person that there are ghosts? No. They just thought they saw a ghost. They believed in them. Alright? Alright, yeah, what about prosperity Christianity? Yeah, this is huge. It's dangerous. But it's a lie. It's an utter lie. What's it say in 1 Timothy? I'm sorry, is it 1 Timothy 4 or 2 Timothy 4? 2 Timothy 4. People bring around themselves teachers to teach what their itching ears want to hear. This is itching ear Christianity. And it is abominable. And it is a lie. So we just need to tell people that it's a lie. What else can you do about it? You know, you can't get rid of it. It is going to exist. All right. What about the gay gene? Is there such a thing as a gay gene? The answer is probably yes. Probably yes. It's not been shown. There's no evidence, there's no direct evidence from any study right now that links any one gene with being gay. But probably there is. All right? Some people are inherently more likely to become addicted because their genetics makes them a person more likely to become addicted, say to alcohol. Other people genetically are more excitable and more likely to fall into anger. Other people, I suppose, are born and they're more likely to feel attraction for the same as opposed to the opposite sex. All of us, you could argue, are genetically predisposed to one particular sin over another, but that's not the point. The point is, we need to repent. So those of you who are genetically predisposed to lusting after women, men, don't you dare judge that guy who's tempted to lust after men. Which is worse? To lust after a woman or a man? If you're not married to them. I can't tell. I'm not sure. Now, I do believe that in the present context, homosexual sin has greater negative impact on lives than heterosexual sin because of certain things that are associated with that. But really, from God's perspective, which is more sinful? Lying, cheating, getting drunk, or lusting after somebody of the same sex? So I believe right now, it's not proved one way or another by science. And those who say it is are wrong. But those who say it's not true are probably equally likely to be wrong. In my opinion, probably there are some people who are more genetically likely to feel that particular temptation than others. So what? Everybody is more likely to be pulled in one direction. All right? So rather than judge people based on such things, we should have compassion on people with such things. And by the way, you could be attracted to the same gender and go to heaven. Now, what you can't do is indulge in that lifestyle. So if a heterosexual indulges in having sex with whoever they want of the opposite sex, they're in just as much trouble as the homosexual who has sex with whoever they want. Now, the problem with the person who's attracted to the same gender is that, you know, for them, you know, marriage has its challenges, honestly. But then again, for those of us who are genetically predisposed to anger, marriage has its challenges as well. I suggest that you, you know, get in contact with the Strength and Weakness Ministry. Probably our good friend Guy Hammond is not going to be available for a while. But when he got up in front of the church in San Diego, after being an evangelist for more than 20 years, and he said to the church, by the way, just, you know, I'm gay. That was interesting, you know. Now, what he meant by that is, when he does struggle with lust, for him, it's guys. He's happily married, although his wife is going to be, unfortunately, dying in the next few weeks, I'm afraid. Happily married with, he says, a fulfilling sex life. I don't know the details. I know his kids hate it when he talks about this stuff. But anyway, and he has children that he loves and stuff like that. But even now, even after 20, almost 30 years as a Christian, he would share with you publicly, he is same-sex attracted. So, you're opposite sex attracted. So, I wouldn't say it's the same thing. It is certainly better for us, you know, to be attracted to the same sex. I'm to the opposite. Who are you? All right. And I would say this. Those who indulge that sinful practice, it's ingrained in them. All right? So having that tendency is nowhere near as problematic as giving in to that tendency. Because once you give in to that tendency, that tends to become imprinted. All right? And so that can be very harmful in the long run. So I'm not saying it's all, I'm not exactly saying it's all the same. It's not exactly all the same. But I think it is possible that there is a genetic link. But I say that could be true about any sin. And the question is, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to be righteous or not? Why can't we pray for the dead? Well, why would you? What would be the purpose of that? If you can give me a biblical reason for it, go for it. Now, you could pray for a dead person if you want, I guess. I'd rather pray for somebody living, because then I could help determine, you know, people's salvation. So if you want to pray for the dead, it seems kind of superstitious to me, honestly. I'm not going to do it. I don't do it. I personally don't think you should. But, you know. All right. Oh, what about cremation? Doug Jacoby just published an article, I think, 2 days ago about cremation. All right? I don't know. Either your body rots or it gets burned. It's all the same. Now, I'll be honest with you. When I was a young Christian, I still had a kind of a superstition about it. I thought cremation would be a bad idea. Even as a young Christian, even as a scientist young Christian, I found the idea of cremation kind of creepy. Honestly. So therefore, fine, don't get cremated then. All right? But I don't see cremation as having any effect, because God's not going to take those same carbon, hydrogen, and nitrogen atoms and recompose them into your new body. Even today, just the whole idea of cremation, I don't know, it just, but that's just me. All right? Does Christian theology and scientific theology complement each other. That's scientific theology is like jumbo shrimp. You know, jumbo shrimp, get it? Jumbo shrimp. That's an oxymoron. Right? You know, get it? Jumbo shrimp. So scientific theology is like jumbo shrimp. Help me out, Roland. Can you explain that? Oh, your shrimp are big. Okay. Scientific theology, I mean, again, many scientists are theists. I'm a scientist, and I'm a theist. So my worldview is that there exists a God who created the universe and who interacts with that universe. So you can be a scientist and have no contradiction with Christian theology at all. I hope not. Otherwise, I'd better change my career. But what do you mean when you say scientific theology? What do you mean? I mean, because science excludes God from its description of the world, at least as it looks at the world. So theology means God. Science means not God. So that's like jumbo shrimp. So I don't have an answer for that question. Okay? Good. So back to our topic. Now, oops. Oh, rats. I did the wrong slide. Let me get to the correct slide. It's probably about the middle. Pretty close. Okay, good. Yeah, that's close enough. So I want to make the very, very strong claim that the Christian worldview is a good one. In fact, it's arguably the only really, really good one. First of all, it's true because the physical world is real, unlike what Buddhism and Hinduism says. How do I know that? Because it is. It was created. How do I know that? Well, because science tells me that it was. And it is good. The physical world is good. In fact, it's amazing. It's blow away amazing. All right? So, and by the way, all these things are in Genesis 1 and 2. All of these. It's amazing. Also, it's true because there exists a spiritual reality. Because rape is wrong. Every single thing I know about the reality of the universe agrees with everything that the Christian worldview tells me. For example, it says evil is real. And folks, evil is real. All right? So, it's true. I believe it's true. Creation is good. Evil exists. I exist. You know? I exist. Remember, do you have a body or are you a body? Right? I have a body. And every human being knows it's true, even if they try to tell themselves it's not true. Okay? Number two, the Christian worldview answers all the important questions totally awesomely, like they say, like totally awesome, you know? It tells me how I got here. It tells me why I'm here. It tells me where I'm going. It tells me why we can understand the universe. It tells me why there's suffering and pain. Tomorrow's lesson. It tells me why there's evil in the world. Tomorrow's lesson. It answers the problem of sin, the problem of suffering, the problem of death. Every single deep question that every single human holds to is answered wonderfully and marvelously by the Christian worldview. Now, I'm comparing that to postmodernism and atheism, which is a disaster. I'm going to compare this to Buddhism, Hinduism, and others. All right, and we'll see. Now, would those who hold to Christianity be better persons than they would if they hold to another worldview? All right, now let's think about it. What does the world owe to Christianity? One is science. If it were not for Christianity, we would not have science. Another thing is the abolition of slavery. If it were not for people holding to the Christian worldview, slavery would be predominant everywhere in the world. That's a fact. That's not an opinion. That's a fact. Civil rights. Where did the idea that individuals have dignity and deserve civil rights come from? It came from Christianity. That is a historical fact. Women's rights. All right? The idea that women and men have equal value and therefore deserve equal rights. Now, unfortunately, Christian-based cultures came around to this late in the game, I have to admit. It's kind of embarrassing. All right? And then, you know, everywhere you go in the world, except Muslim countries, I'll explain that in a minute, Christians do a majority of the benevolent work in all those places. All right? Why? Because the Christian worldview is the best worldview. Now, I'm not going to delve into that right now. I'm going to come back around to that question tomorrow when I talk about answering the hard questions. Now, the naturalists say, what about the evil done in the name of Christianity? All right, that's true. That's happened. But that's because they weren't obeying Jesus. Besides, if you want to charge Christians with doing evil, that means you don't believe in your own worldview because you don't even believe in evil. So don't ask me that question. All right? Now, I'm going to spend the rest of our time today discussing other worldviews other than the three I've already discussed. The important worldviews are naturalism, already discussed. Postmodernism, which is the viewless worldview, already discussed. Biblical theism, and then these. Deism, pantheism, animism, polytheism, and dualism. Alright? Now, these are all big words, but you kind of need to know. For example, if you want to have a discussion with a Hindu, you might want to know what their worldview is. You know, that'd be helpful. Their worldview is pantheism. Pantheism says God and the universe are kind of the same thing. Pan means all. In other words, everything is God. And if everything is God, then guess who's God? You are God. Wouldn't that be awesome? That's pantheism. This is the worldview, at least theoretically, held by more people than any other. Theoretically. Because it's the worldview of Hinduism, which is over a billion people, and sort of, kind of, the worldview of Buddhism. And, of course, most Chinese aren't really Buddhists, but supposedly they are. All right, another one is deism. This is the idea of a created world created by a god who is not involved in this world. This worldview is fairly rare today, but it was a common worldview in Paul's day. In fact, one of the groups he was debating with in Acts 17 were deists. Remember, he says, in him we live and move and have our being, right? And, you know, he's opposing deism, the idea which is that God is distant and separated, uninvolved. That's called stoicism. Okay, got it? Alright, and the other worldview that he refutes there in Acts 17 is Epicureanism. And Epicureanism is a weird form of pantheism. Then there's animism, polytheism. This was the worldview of almost everybody in ancient times. The idea that spirit pervades everything and that there are many gods. And according to this worldview, the world is inherently chaotic and governed by these different forces. I'm not going to deal with that much because there aren't very many polytheists and animists left. Although arguably Hinduism is very polytheistic. Then there's dualism, the idea that there's good and evil, like yin and yang. Many Chinese accept a dualistic worldview. Manichaeism, which was a major religion in the New Testament times, is also dualist. Sort of, there's good is real, bad is real. The world is sort of like a both. It's kind of like Star Wars, you know? You got the Force. It's kind of like that. Okay? So, these are the different worldviews. We need to ask, which is the best one? Now, we've already seen naturalism and postmodernism either completely collapse because they're not true, or they're useless because they don't answer any of the important questions, or they're really bad because if you accept them, you create a world that nobody wants to live in. So let's talk about these other worldviews. All right? Some people say all of these lead to the same place. That is a totally crazy idea. That all of these... pantheism leads to the same place as theism? What? What? Now, if Genesis 1:1 is true, then all these other... by the time you get to the end of Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, well, therefore, Hinduism and Buddhism are true. In the beginning, God. Therefore, Hinduism, Buddhism, Duism... dualism and polytheism are not true. In the beginning, God created. You know, by the time you finish Genesis 1:1, the only thing left standing is theism and arguably deism. But then you get to Genesis chapter 2, and deism is gone. So basically, Genesis 1 is a statement that theism is the correct worldview. Other worldviews cannot be accommodated with this. If Genesis 1 is true, then you better not go for Hinduism or anything else. These would make you wrong, bad, and clueless. Those are not good things. Now, in Acts 17, I don't have time to get into this because otherwise I don't have time to cover the other worldviews. But the model here is this. Paul finds common ground. For example, he says, man, there's all kinds of idols around here. This is crazy. And believe it or not, his hearers totally agree with this. The Epicureans and the Stoics say, you're right, Paul. All these idols are an evidence of bad education and nonsense. He finds common ground. Find common ground with your atheist who says we need to take care of the environment. Say, you know what? Christianity totally agrees with that, and here's why. All right, find common ground. You have common ground with Buddhists. You have common ground with Muslims. Find that common ground, define that common ground, and say, but on this we disagree. And here's why. Here's why this is better. That's what Paul does. He finds common ground, and then he says, but let me explain the Christian worldview. It's better. Notice in verse 28 and Acts 17, he quotes their philosophers. He quotes Aretas, a Stoic philosopher. He knew their worldview better than they did. You should understand the Quran better than a Muslim. You should understand Hinduism better than the Hindu, which, by the way, is not as hard as you think. You should understand atheism and its implications, postmodernism and its implications, better than your atheist or postmodernist friend. Then you can point out to them what they believe and its implications. All right, got it? And he argues for the superiority of the Christian worldview. He says, you think God is distant and unknowable. He says, no, God is close to us. And he set the exact time and place so that we would reach out to him and find him. God wants a relationship with us. He's reached out to us. He wants us to reach out to him. So he's showing that his worldview is superior to theirs. And then he gives evidence based on the resurrection of Jesus. Now, having laid the groundwork of finding common ground, showing you understand where they're coming from, and showing why the Christian worldview is better, then he brings Jesus into the question. I'm not saying don't mention Jesus. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying, you know, let's look at Paul's model for dealing with other worldviews and consider adapting some of what he does to what we do. Okay? All right, great. Hinduism, the main religion of India, roughly 1 billion people. It began as pure polytheism, but it evolved into a kind of a syncretic blend of polytheism and pantheism. Really, arguably, Hinduism is not a religion. Hinduism is a multiplicity of religions. Honestly. In fact, even the idea of Hinduism was created by the British. They want to explain the religion in India. So in the Hindu subcontinent, they gave the name Hinduism. Hinduism is not even an Indian word. So believe it or not, the idea of Hinduism is kind of, sort of, in a way, a created idea. And yet it's a useful idea because the worldview across the Indian subcontinent is quite very much in common. Okay, got it? So Brahma is the chief god, Shiva, Vishnu, destructor, preserver, etc. And then because God is not personal and therefore not knowable, you have all these emanations like Rama and Krishna. These are personalizing this impersonal non-entity. All right? All right, and there's so many teas. There's Lakshmi and Devi and Rama and Krishna. These are these incarnations. According to the Hindu worldview, the physical world is an illusion. Now, is that true? No, it's not true. All right? According to Hinduism, the physical world is an illusion, and then the spiritual reality is the true reality. First of all, that directly opposes the Christian worldview, number one, and number two, it's not true. All right, according to Hinduism, the ultimate goal of human life is to not exist anymore. Yippee! Woohoo! So awesome! To evaporate and to be dissolved into this universal non-entity. Wow. Nirvana is oneness with this non-thinking, non-personal spiritual force. Okay. Now, Hinduism has human beings looking inward and finding God inside of yourself. So if you look inward, where are you not looking? Outward. So no wonder Christians do most of the benevolent work in India. All these are pointing to it being not true, not giving the right answers, and not creating a better person. Again, it's not true because Hindu cosmology is flat out not true. All right, we already talked about that. Okay? Is it true? No. Why? Because the world is real. By the way, according to Hinduism, evil is also not real. Now, I think evil is a problem. Now, does ignoring a problem help you to solve that problem? No. All right? Does it make a person a better person? Now, I believe Hinduism offers better answers than atheism, honestly. I think it offers better answers than postmodernism. But the Christianity's answers are way better. Does Hinduism make you a better person? I'd say the Hindu worldview does better than modernism or postmodernism. But, you know, it denies the reality of evil. It says suffering is your fault. All right, no, that's not better. No, it is not better. It is an inferior worldview. And so, just be aware of these things. They say suffering is your fault. All right, karma. They say evil is not real. And they say look inward, not outward. All of these things make a person not be better. Now, are there any better Hindus than some Christians? Honestly, yeah, actually. But that doesn't prove their worldview is better. All right, what about Buddhism? All right? Now, the Buddhist worldview is somewhat similar to the Hindu worldview because, remember I said Hinduism technically is a creation of the British? In other words, Hinduism is a word for the religions in India. All right? That's why, for example, you've heard of Sikhism? Until the 19th century, Sikhism wasn't even acknowledged as a separate religion from Hinduism, because what would that even mean? All right? But nevertheless, Buddhism, although it started in India, it left India, and it disappeared in India. So we won't treat it as part of Hinduism. But the fact that it has a similar worldview to Hinduism, well, what's the surprise there? Because you could argue, and I wouldn't defend this, you could argue that Buddhism is a form of Hinduism. I would not defend that viewpoint. Because historically, it's not really, you know. Anyway, I won't get caught up in that. So, it is pantheist. The Buddhist worldview is essentially pantheism. And it has the same problems of being wrong based on that. The Four Noble Truths of Siddhartha are suffering is not getting what you want. Okay. The cause of suffering is desire. The way to end suffering is to end desire. The way to end desire is the Eightfold Path. Alright? So Buddhism encourages dispassion. Christianity encourages compassion. Which is better? Compassion or dispassion? Compassion is better. Okay, got it? Detachment. The way to nirvana is to be detached. Well, what about your children? What about your culture? You know? What about suffering? detached. Their way to deal with suffering is to ignore it, as if that solves the problem of suffering. This is not a better worldview. It's not true. The answers it provides are better than atheism or postmodernism, but they're certainly not as good as Christianity, because like Hinduism, what's the purpose of life? To essentially not exist as an individual personality anymore. But God says each one of you has dignity as an individual person. Personhood is good. Buddhism, personhood is bad. Christianity, personhood is good. I think personhood is good. The Eightfold Path, right value, right speech, right action. The Eightfold Path, I kind of like that. The problem is it undergirds this Four Noble Truths, which I don't agree with at all. So if you have the Eightfold Path, which is good, but it's supporting an assumption that's bad, I say it's not so. But on the other hand, this is a lot better than atheism, right? A lot better. And Buddhist people tend to be respectful of others, right? There's good things about Buddhism. Like I think I already said, I actually like Buddha and most things I know about him. I appreciated that he wanted to find the middle path between paganism and asceticism, between indulging the senses and completely denying them. Christianity kind of agrees with that in a way. All right, but the problem is his worldview is wrong. And although it might make you a better person than an atheist, it certainly doesn't make as good a person as Christianity does. Science would have never come from Buddhism. Impossible. Buddhism would allow slavery. And civil rights coming from a Buddhist culture, it doesn't give dignity to the individual. Okay? All right, you got these different levels. It's not true. Is it a good one? Does it answer the question satisfactorily? I don't think so. I'm going to talk about evil tomorrow, so I'm going to skip that slide. I want to end in about 5 or 6 minutes so we can do plenty of questions. All right, let's talk about the Muslim worldview. Okay? That's the last one I'm going to discuss. Now, to some extent, I brought some of these up already earlier, but I want to bring them up again a little bit. Now, the Muslim worldview is closer to the Christian worldview than any other. If you're uncomfortable with that, I'm sorry, but it's true. For example, if I were to go back to that Christian worldview, what I have, about 7 or 8 points? About 4 or so of those points, the Muslim worldview agrees with them. It agrees that God created the universe, that it's real, and the physical creation is good, etc. Okay? You know, sometimes you hate the one who's most similar to you. You know what I'm saying? So let's not do that. Let's acknowledge with our Muslim friends we actually have a fair amount in common. Now, they're probably not going to acknowledge that, but maybe you could. Okay? By the way, Allah is just another name for God. You can call the God of the Bible Allah if you want. In church, when they're praying in Indonesia, they say, Allah, help us, you know, etc. They pray in the Christian church, our church, in Indonesia, they say, Allah. Now, the government in Malaysia tried to make it illegal for Christians to call their God Allah. But I don't know. Anyway, the Muslim worldview. But there's problems with the Muslim worldview, as I said yesterday. Because according to the Muslim worldview, we're saved by our own effort. That our charity atones for sins. In the Muslim worldview, we earn our salvation, we earn favor with Allah, and we earn a very worldly picture of paradise. In Islam, salvation is earned through the efforts of those who were actually pre-selected by Allah, because Islam is predestinational. In other words, in Islam, who goes to heaven and who goes to hell was pre-selected. Kind of like Calvinism. And I'll tell you right now, Calvinism is not a good worldview. It denies certain aspects of the Christian worldview. So who reaches out to who? Every other world religion has us reaching out to God or whatever concept of God. Every other world religion is work salvation, except Christianity and Judaism. But the problem is, how am I going to attain to God? As if I could. In Christianity, God doesn't say, you need to earn your way to me. It says, I'm going to come down and I'm going to bring you to where I am. Muslims say the idea that God would become flesh is blasphemy. I say it's the most beautiful thing ever. I've had Muslims send criticisms of Christianity to my website. They say, according to your religion, God pooped his diapers. That's disrespectful to God. I say, that is one of the most beautiful things about God, that he pooped his diapers. I'm serious. Because God became flesh so that we could know God. John chapter 1, we beheld his glory. I'll defend that against the Muslim worldview any day. Any day. Now, I'll admit that the Islamic worldview is closer to the Christian worldview than others. But in Islam, God is very distant. In Islam, God has mercy. Not love so much. It's not like God loves us. It's that it's merciful to us. Mercy is good. Love is better. In Islam, Allah determines what happens. There's some surahs there you can read that shows this idea. They're always saying, inshallah, 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 God willing. All right, fine. Sometimes we say God willing. But when they mean by God willing, they mean something different from what we mean by God willing. Trust me. Is it true? Is Islam true? Well, one thing I know, Muhammad ain't no prophet. Alright? Because he said that Jesus is not good. And he says that Jesus was not crucified. Now, one thing I know for sure, Jesus was crucified. That is a lie. So Islam is not true. And that's a problem for me. Besides, the guy had more than 15 wives. He massacred people simply for not supporting him politically. You know, the Quran is full of science errors. It's full of copy errors. And in Islam, God changes his mind. It says, oops, sorry. Does it make its followers better than the other would be? Now, I believe Islam as a worldview makes for better people, certainly than atheism, certainly than postmodernism, but I would argue even than Buddhism and Hinduism. I know we don't want to hear that, but sometimes your close brother is the one you have the most trouble with. All right? But the bottom line is, one of the pillars of Islam is almsgiving. All right? Because Islam agrees that we individuals have dignity, at least on some level. But there's a difference. In Islam, almsgiving only for Muslims. So, who does most of the benevolent works in Buddhist countries? Christians. Who does most of the benevolent work in Hindu countries? Christians. Who does most of the benevolent work in Muslim countries? Muslims. Okay? But they're not helping out in Christian countries, in Buddhist countries, in Hindu countries. In fact, it's against their religion. Is that compassion? It's mercy. All right? So no, it is not a better worldview. Does Islam offer equal respect to women as to men? Now, believe it or not, the Quran shows more respect to women than most Muslim societies do. So most of the terrible treatment of women is more cultural than Islamic, honestly. So let's be honest about that. But nevertheless, it does say, beat your wife. All right, that's not so good. Not so. It does say, beat your wife. All right? The Christian says, love your wife. I don't know, that's better. All right, and I haven't even talked about jihad. I'm not going to get into that now. So, summary, before we have our maybe one or two questions, then we have our groups. The theologies of world religions are fundamentally and diametrically opposed and cannot be made to agree on the most basic things. Do they have some similarities of moral teaching? Yes. But their description of the world are completely in opposition. The Christian worldview is radically different, and it's the only one which is true. It's the only one which provides fully satisfactory answer to every question that we care about, and just even common sense tells us that it makes us better people than we otherwise would have been. Okay? So I think it's the best worldview. All right, so maybe I have time for one or two questions. Did you have a group discussion thing? All right, so we'll take maybe 5 minutes worth of questions if they're out there. Questions? Yeah. Speak loud, please.
Regarding Adam.
Regarding what?
Adam.
Adam, you mean? Again, like I said, I believe the Bible is inspired by God, all right?
Repeat the question, bro.
He says, so what about Adam? A single man or many men or something like that? The Bible has first man, first woman in a relationship with God in a place where their needs were met. And then from there, all people who have the image of God were produced. And I just believe it. So one man, one woman. Okay? Now, there are other things I could say about that. What about Neanderthal and all that kind of stuff? But I'm just going to answer your question. One man, one woman, the first created in the image of God. Okay? What does that mean, in the image of God? It means capable of love. Having a conscience. being conscious, self-aware, having the ability to create, having the same emotions that God has, all right, and having will, having the ability to choose. All right, yes. I believe there were two originally, and all of us are directly related to them. Okay? Yeah. Filipinos are not really great at this kind of question. It's more than any other culture. It's amazing. It's everybody's different, you know. You guys are very shy. Yeah.
Bro, regarding God being so loving, we have the problem where in the time of Joshua, God commanded to destroy everything.
Yeah. All right. He's bringing up a question that I'm going to spend quite a bit of time tomorrow. Okay, tomorrow's topic is answering the hard questions. Okay, the question you brought up is, why does God have people killing people in the Old Testament? I'm purposely going to not answer that question, all right, because then you feel like you have to come back tomorrow. Okay, but that is one of the hard questions. All right, yeah, so we'll talk about that tomorrow. It looks like we don't have a lot of questions. So we're going to break. I'll let you give the instructions, Roland. By the way, we're going to get bonus material tomorrow. I'm going to do a thing on the prophecies in Daniel, which are some of the most awesome evidence for the inspiration of the Bible. So bonus material. All
right. Bonus meaning no extra charge.
Right.
No extra charge, yeah. All right. We love free stuff and available to us. Okay, just want to appreciate that, Mr. John.